Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. State Supreme Courts can have as much impact on our lives as the U.S. Supreme Court, but they certainly don't get the same amount of attention. And there's rising concern about the attention being paid to the diversity on these high courts, including the ones that we have, the one that we have here in Texas. So we're talking about the supreme interest, what's happening with state Supreme Courts and diversity. And you can call in and join the conversation. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to thesource at tpr.org and tweet at us at tprsource. We're joined now by Alicia Bannon, a managing director of the Democracy Program at the Brenham Center for Justice and co-author of the report, State Supreme Court Diversity. And welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me.
Emily Platoff is here covering the law and its intersections with politics for the Texas Tribune. Emma, welcome to The Source.
Thanks for having me.
And Sharon Navarro is associate professor at the Department of Political Science and Geography at the University of Texas at San Antonio. Sharon, hi. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me.
So can you tell us about the report from the Brenham Center State Supreme Court Diversity? What did y'all find?
So we looked at state Supreme Courts across the country and found that 24 states have all white state Supreme Courts as of 2019. 15% of all seats on state Supreme Courts are held by people of color, while people of color make up about 40% of the population as a whole. We also found that 17 states have only one woman on their state Supreme Court. So, you know, across the board, or in many states at least, we found that these state high courts, which are really powerful institutions that can have a huge impact on people's lives and their pocketbooks and their rights, don't look anything like the communities whose decisions are being the communities that they serve and who are being affected by their decisions.
And Emma Platoff with the Texas Tribune, what does it look like in Texas?
Yeah, Texas courts sort of follow that pattern. We have two high courts in the state of Texas. The Texas Supreme Court hears civil cases, and the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals handles all criminal matters. And the statistics are the same. Those courts each have 9 members, and each court has only 1 Hispanic justice. So very white high courts in the state of Texas.
Sharon Navarro, as you teach this at the University of Texas at San Antonio in the Department of Political Science and Geography, how much attention does this get? When you teach political science, you talk about state Supreme Courts. So how much time do you give it usually?
We spend at least one day or one lecture on it. And I often start off by talking about the importance of diversity, because diversity in institutions give society and constituents credibility, legitimacy, a sense that they see themselves up there. And you have to pay attention to demographics and diversity because those are predictors of behaviors and politicians and policies and court decisions and whatnot.
But given the size, the role that the state Supreme Court actually has, and maybe we can go over that a little bit more, can you kind of explain how big of a deal they are?
They're incredibly important. I often tell my students that on the one hand, you have an institution like the legislature that makes the laws. Without the legislature, you can't really have the laws. We can go up to our legislator and ask them to hear us out. We don't realize as a society that the judiciary and the judges often take the controversies over those laws and tear them down and build them back up and reconstruct them so that they come back out again in society or where they actually affect us. So in a sense, they're kind of redoing the laws. And so it's incredibly important that we pay attention to it. But oftentimes, students aren't aware of who these judges are and believe that it doesn't affect them and have very little contact with a judge. They can have more of a contact with a city council person or legislator or representative, but the judiciary really doesn't enter their mindset.
And I'm just thinking of a couple of cases, the plastic bag ban that some cities in Texas tried to put out. Also, cities have tried to do sick leave ordinances, and that's run into trouble with the state Supreme Court. So, Emma Platoff, can you talk about what happens when it gets to that level?
Well, as you mentioned, the cases that the Supreme Court is hearing in the state of Texas are about issues that really matter to folks. You know, we're talking about spousal benefits for same-sex couples, these really high-stakes environmental ordinances, parental rights, the death penalty in the case of the Court of Criminal Appeals. One of the things I found in my reporting, I was speaking to Justice Deborah Hankinson, who served on the court decades ago, and she talked about the role that her voice as a woman had in conference. So, you know, once or twice a month, usually on a Tuesday, the nine justices of the Texas Supreme Court gather around a long wooden table and they talk about the cases that are pending on their docket. And she would recall that she or one of the other women serving with her on the court at that time would raise a point that their six colleagues, the men on the court, just hadn't really thought of a detail or a certain angle that had occurred to them based on their life experiences. And the other two women would not. And she just sort of described the tangible impact that having this type of representation on the highest court in the state can have on the impact of these high stakes cases.
And you mentioned the death penalty, and that goes to the Court of Criminal Appeals, but things like how much secrecy that we have, we don't know what death penalty, where the death penalty drugs are coming from. That's something that the Texas Supreme Court has ruled on and says that's going to be a secret.
Yeah, that's just one of many open government cases that has landed before the Texas Supreme Court. You know, these are issues that really matter to all Texans, even though I think that the Texas Supreme Court, as you point out, doesn't maybe get as much attention as other branches of government. It certainly has as much impact on our daily lives.
And Alisa Bannon, in your reporting with the Brennan Center and looking at the state Supreme Court diversity across the country, you bring up some astonishing numbers showing that it's pretty much dominated by white men. But what about also ideologically? Is there enough ideological diversity?
Well, I mean, I think on a number of different fronts, you know, courts lack diversity. I mean, another aspect that we didn't look at in this report, but I know others have spoken about are issues like professional diversity. So having judges that come from different professional backgrounds, people who have served as public defenders, people who have, who have worked in legal services. So having, you know, a wide array of different backgrounds that can all affect your approach to judging, how you look at facts and interpret the law that's coming before you. So, I mean, I think that's another element that we didn't look at directly in this report, but that I know from other research has been done is a real, kind of issue in the courts. You know, in terms of ideological diversity, I think that what we've seen more generally in state Supreme Courts across the country is that judicial selection itself has become much more politicized. And I think people have often been bringing more of an ideological orientation to the selection of justices in a way that didn't occur maybe two or three decades ago. And I think there may be diversity implications, racial and gender diversity implications for that as well. One thing we looked at was racial disparities in judicial elections, finding, for example, wide fundraising disparities. So people of color had a lot more trouble fundraising in their state Supreme Court elections. They had, they were more likely to be challenged. They were less likely to get support from outside groups. And all of those dynamics are part and parcel of the much more politicized dynamics that we're seeing in these judicial elections across the country.
And Sharon Navarro, with the geographic diversity in Texas, Texas is the big state. Does where you come from does have an impact on your view? Is there geographic diversity?
Geographic diversity is lacking in the higher courts. There's been a crisis for several years.
So where are they all coming from, pretty much?
The big cities. The big cities, they're big urban cities that have the money, that have the law firms that can contribute to these types of races. You have to remember that these courts have a very narrow target audience. It's the lawyers, it's the law firms, it's the politicians. They all have their hands in the pot.
So it's a closed world.
This is a very closed world. You and I would never think of contributing to, or perhaps the average person down the street would never think of contributing to a judge because they would not think it would impact their life.
So having someone perhaps from the border who someone who grew up, you know, on a West Texas ranch or something?
Sure. A different perspective can make a significant contribution, but you also have to remind yourself that they also have the laws that they have to follow. So they could show some sensitivity, some additional understanding of a particular case before them, but in the end, they have to follow the law.
But in Texas, we elect our state Supreme Court justices, but we elect them on a statewide basis. Not by districts.
Right, unless you're talking about the appellate.
No, we're talking about the highest court.
Yes,
highest okay, courts. So there is no – so that kind of brings that about, that we don't have that geographic diversity.
Correct.
All right, so we're going to talk more about that. We're going to come back from the break. How do you feel about the lack of diversity on the Texas Supreme Court? What do you want to know about how justices make it to the bench? Do you think the high courts should be more representative of the populations that they serve? Does a lack of diversity affect the court's decision-making, undermine its legitimacy? Call in. We want to hear from you. This is your court, and you should have a voice up there. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. State Supreme Court diversity, it matters, because having folks up there on the high bench who looks like the general population, that means they have a better understanding of how they can better serve the general population, or at least that's what the theory is. Unfortunately, we're not seeing that a whole lot in state Supreme Courts around the nation and here in Texas. And that's according to a report from the Brennan Center for Justice. Co-author of the report is Alicia Bannon. And Alicia, can you talk about how this lack of diversity could impact how people perceive the high court?
Absolutely. I think when judges are making decisions that are having profound impacts on people's lives, and those judges don't look like the communities that are being affected, it can have a profound impact on public confidence in the judiciary and, you know, in our democracy as a whole. You know, and it also, it matters in addition to public confidence, it also matters for the development of the law as well, and for people to feel confident that, you know, we're having diverse perspectives that are informing how people are looking at the facts and cases, how people are interpreting the law. As an example that always sticks with me is a case about a decade ago in the U.S. Supreme Court, at a time when Ruth Bader Ginsburg was the only female justice on that court. You had a 13-year-old girl that was strip searched because they suspected that she had snuck Advil into school. And you had the justices during oral argument kind of making light about it, talking about, you know, locker rooms in middle school. And Justice Ginsburg said, you know, you don't know what it's like to be a 13-year-old girl. You don't know how humiliating something like that is. And she convinced her colleagues, you know, at the end, the court ruled 8-1 that was an illegal search. So it matters for public confidence in our courts. And it also matters to have a development of the law that reflects the growing diversity of the United States.
Emma Platoff with the Texas Tribune. Frequently, the governor gets to make appointments to these courts. Has he been, Governor Abbott, been, how's he been on this?
So the governor, who it's important to note, you know, by all accounts, takes these appointments very seriously. He served himself on the Texas Supreme Court. It's where he launched his political career. He's had the opportunity so far to make 3 appointments. The first two were white men. The third, most recently, was a white woman, Justice Jane Bland from Houston. He's certainly faced some criticisms from advocates who say he's not paying enough attention to questions of racial and ethnic diversity. But there's also been widespread support for the particular justices he's chosen. You know, I think that they are appreciated across the board for being smart and thoughtful and experienced lawyers.
But as I understand it, you're reporting at the Texas Tribune, y'all did an open records request and were able to look at everyone who have, you know, you have to kind of apply to be appointed to these things, right? And you looked at those applications. What did you find?
Well, yes, we found that there were a few dozen applications submitted to the governor's office. You know, much like the Texas State Bar, those applicants were overwhelmingly white and male. The numbers here are really striking. Two-thirds of Texas lawyers are men, and 4 in 5 are white. So this is not – the Texas Bar is less diverse than the state of Texas's population. But there were certainly many women who applied for both of the openings that were ultimately allocated to two white men, and that's something that the governor has drawn some criticism for.
Okay. So the number is 210-614-8980 for you to join our conversation as we talk about the lack of diversity on state Supreme Courts across the nation and here in Texas. Sharon Navarro, professor at the Department of Political Science and Geography at UTSA. When we talk about diversity and why that matters, some people say it doesn't matter, that, you know, the judges are just the judges and they're going to do the law and it shouldn't matter what their surname is.
Well, I have to echo what some of the discussants have already mentioned. You should have some credibility in an institution. And the judiciary is often the last institution to be diversified. You want to have legitimacy in the representation. You want a representative body that reflects you, that can perhaps understand what the regular person who doesn't sit on the court is going through. So diversity is incredibly important, particularly when you get to issues that affect a diverse ethnic group. So absolutely it is important for representation, legitimacy, democracy, quality of representation, quality of construction of law, all of those things.
But to say it doesn't matter, I mean, it maybe for perception-wise, but what about outcome-wise? You know, to have individuals who are on the court who are, you know, they came up from the border or they came up from the panhandle, they didn't all come up from law firms in Houston. You know, how does that, you know, well, how will that impact outcomes?
It would have, it would allow for a little bit.
These guys decide also water issues. That's right. A big thing. We're trying to figure out what to do about, like, you know, the right to pump water in Texas. And it's a big difference if you grew up in West Texas and, you know, where water is more precious and a commodity than, you know, if you didn't.
Well, on the one hand, you have to understand that as a minority sitting on a court, you don't want to be seen as someone by your peers as lending an extra hand to someone who looks like you coming before you or having a case that looks like you coming before you, because then you face a certain perspective or response from your peers. So, yes, you can have an added understanding to what's coming before you, but in the end, you have to follow the law.
Yeah. But the law can be twisted in many different
Absolutely.
Ways, you know. And Alicia Bannon, with the with your reporting, which you look at with your with the Brennan Center for Justice, how has that been expressed? That, you know, we've had a long history of racial and gender discrimination in the United States. Inequities are here. You know, is the what kind of role does the court have in trying to deal with that?
Well, so, I mean, courts play a core role in responding to racial inequities. I mean, they hear civil rights challenges. They're making decisions, you know, oftentimes people, you know, communities that haven't, you know, been able to have a voice in the political process have turned to the courts as a last resort. So, I mean, they're incredibly important institutions. You know, I think our long history of racial discrimination in the United States is part of the story about why we see a lack of diversity on state Supreme Courts today. You know, in Texas, for example, as late as 1950, the state law schools discriminated on the basis of race. So you couldn't even attend a law school in Texas, a state law school at least, if you, you know, if you were Black. So, you know, there's a long history of discrimination that's fed into what we see. You know, we were one of the other discussants was talking about relatively small representation of people of color within the bar, within the pool of lawyers. And there's a long history that contributes to those dynamics today. And, you know, what we've seen also is that, you know, people of color are underrepresented in the legal profession. They're even more underrepresented in leadership within the legal profession. So you see a dynamic where the pipeline narrows over time. And, you know, and I think, again, there's a host of reasons for that, everything from, you know, the existence of bias, you know, a lack of access to mentors and others who can help, you know, help you navigate that field and move up into greater leadership roles within the law and then be well positioned to become a judge.
Let's go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980 with David. David, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Diversity is important, but I would be more interested in knowing how the legal scholars around the nations view the Texas Supreme Court decisions and rulings. I'll take a comment offline. Thank you.
All right, David, thank you for that. Emma Platoff with the Texas Tribune, can you respond to that?
I mean, it's hard to kind of generalize here. You know, yeah. The nine justices on the Texas Supreme Court are all sort of well-respected. They, of course, have different expertises. One important note that people may not be aware of, in Texas, we elect our judges in partisan elections. So all nine of the justices on the high court are Republicans. And certainly there have been some decisions where those on the left point to that fact as having potentially influenced things. There are critics who say that the court is too business friendly, for example. But as we say, these justices are making really difficult decisions about really tricky questions of law. And I think it would be a mistake to sort of overestimate the role ideology plays. The vast majority of the cases they hear don't really have a partisan bent one way or the other.
Right. But they may not have a partisan bent, but in these tricky decisions, you have to assign different weights to different issues, one thing versus another. The people's right to know versus a company's right to keep their secret. And they weigh one versus the other, and that's how things roll out of the courts, Emma.
Absolutely, it is. And, you know, I think it's good for people to have those discussions. The judges themselves, of course, don't always agree on these very tricky questions.
All right. So we're going to be taking a break, and I want to make sure that our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Do you think that lack of diversity on the state's Supreme Court affects the court's major decisions? Do you think that it's important to have women and minorities, rural Texans represented on the courts on the highest bench? Call in. We want to hear from you at 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this break.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health. The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need. Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about state Supreme Courts and their diversity. We want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. Akeem is on the line. Akeem, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I don't even know how it is a question whether it is important to have racial and ethnic and religious and demographical and gender diversity. If that was the case, that it wasn't important, then, and law was just law, then, like, gay rights and civil rights, which were a form of discrimination that was legalized, would still be on the books. If there wasn't people from diverse backgrounds and races and genders that thought differently about these laws, then they would still be in place, and discrimination in those areas would not have made so many steps forward.
Right. Akeem, thank you for that. Alicia Bannon with the Brennan Center for Justice. Have we seen different outcomes with different makeups for different courts in different states?
There's been some empirical research that's been done that has suggested that at least in some kinds of cases, having a diverse set of judges, you know, when you have multiple judges like on a state Supreme Court hearing cases together, that having judges that are women or people of color affect not only how those judges rule in cases, but also how their colleagues rule, which I think is so important because it goes to the fact that judges have to deliberate. They speak to each other. And so having a diverse set of perspectives in the room isn't just about having that one person vote a particular way, but also share information and life experiences and a perspective that might ultimately convince their colleagues to vote differently as well. And so I think, and that's also something that's just been echoed by many judges just anecdotally kind of reflecting on their experiences that they've benefited tremendously from having diverse perspectives in the room and learning from their colleagues.
And Sharon Navarro with the UTSA Department of Political Science Geography, how representative, how many Latinas do we have on the bench in Texas? Do we have any other than on district courts? Or
For the Texas Supreme Court, we have two.
Okay, and so and
then the lower down ballot you go, the more Latinos you have.
Okay, and have we seen anything with the Latinos that we have on the benches? Are they, you know, with their representation? Is that
I have to echo the Alicia what she had mentioned. The research that I have done has reported that minority women tend to do better in certain types of courts than men, at least in the case study of Texas. If it's a Latina running for a lower court, perhaps a family court, they tend to have higher instances of re-election or election, more so than a person who is not a Latina and not a female, right? And I've asked them, I've said, why do you think this is the case? You know, what helped you in your election? And their response, and this is anecdotal, right? Their response is, I think the general public thinks that as Latinas sitting in family court, we would understand the structure of a home. The issues that families go through, the dynamics, and so they may feel more comfortable with a female sitting in a family court than they would a male sitting in a family court. So that does seem to echo in the lower courts.
And Emma Platoff with Texas Tribune, as we've pointed out, these are partisan elected judges. Is fundraising part of this?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, it's really hard to get elected as a judge in Texas. These are low information, down ballot races. In Harris County, for example, you might have as many as 75 judges on the ballot. People often don't know much about the judges they're choosing between. And so name ID is a really important question here. We see voters sometimes lean towards names that sound better or perhaps sound more familiar for them. And this is a point that Dr. Bannon, you made really well in this report from the Brennan Center, is that the appointment system can really be a tool for promoting diversity in a state. We see, for example, that no Hispanic justice has ever been elected to the Texas Supreme Court without having first been appointed by the governor. That's because these are really difficult races to run, and having the support of a top elected official, in this case, Governor Greg Abbott, can really help judges in these low information races, especially, as you point out, with this question of fundraising.
And let's go to Chris on the phones. Chris, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. My wife's a Title I school teacher in an elementary school, and I think that part of this goes back to that. You know, when her friends get together, they all start talking about, you know, what their classrooms are and consist of. And some of her friends have, like, iPads distributed one-to-one. And I know my first year dating my wife, the book said that Bill Clinton was the president. And this is just not that many years ago, but we'd already been through another president, and their social studies, current events, showed that. And I just don't see how those kids have a chance to be on a Supreme Court judge when they feel like the system doesn't care as it is.
All right, Chris, thank you for that call. Sharon Navarro, do you think there is some sort of institutional problem with if you come from a poor school district, you're not going to get the best education, then you don't get to you don't get that glide path to that rare air at top.
Absolutely. Having the lack of resources certainly contributes to the lack of pipeline, the lack of knowledge to who's sitting on the court and how you can best get there. Absolutely a contributing factor.
And let's go to Stephen. Stephen, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I'd just like to kind of place a warning that placing too much emphasis on diversity is almost anti-American in the sense that we have a representative government and we could never perfectly have people that have the same experience as us or look like us, and that it also places an illegitimacy on our entire system. I think we need to be careful.
All right, Stephen, thank you for that. So let's go to Alicia Bannon with the Brennan Center to talk about that.
Well, I think it's certainly right that that you know no court is going to be able to fully represent fully reflect the diversity of a population in every possible dimension. But I also think that you know the current status quo is itself, I think, a real challenge to the legitimacy of our judicial system. You know, white men make up less than a third of the U.S. population, but more than half of all state Supreme Court justices nationwide. You know, if we have, you know, if you have a dynamic where, you know, the only black person in a courtroom is in handcuffs, that's going to be a real challenge to the legitimacy of our justice system. And so, you know, I think that paying attention to diversity is important with respect to the public confidence in our courts and the legitimacy of our courts.
And another caller. This is John. John, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Good morning or good afternoon. I just, one of your panelists said that if there was a person of color or on the bench, that they would want to be careful not to show preferential treatment for someone that looks like them or came from the same place as them. I would ask that person, well, how is that any different than what's currently happening, where we have affluent white males making decisions that benefit affluent white males daily?
All right, John, thank you for that. So Sharon Navarro with the UTSA?
Yeah, absolutely. My point there, or the point of the elected officials that I interviewed, was that their perception, the optic of their among their peers, was that they didn't want to have that added burden or that added category that they were being preferential, even though we know it exists, right? Because there's so few of minorities on the courts, they didn't want this added, and they were aware that you could have this added label placed on you if you were perceived as giving someone preferential treatment, even though they acknowledged it existed on the other side of the bench.
Emma Platoff with the Texas Tribune. We've seen a blue wave hit courtrooms across Texas this last election, but that was pretty much regionally, like in Harris County, here in Bexar County as well. Any chance that a blue wave could have an impact on the high court?
Absolutely. That's a big question going into 2020. There hasn't been a Democrat elected to statewide office in Texas for more than two decades. And as we look ahead to 2020, a year where the high courts in Texas are near the top of the ballot, you know, we'll have a race for U.S. Senate. One of the Democrats running to challenge John Cornyn will have a shot at that. It's expected to be a high turnout year because it's a presidential year, and we'll see whether Democrats have a chance at taking a seat on the Texas Supreme Court.
But the way the Supreme Court, they have staggered seats, the way they come up for election. And Sharon, it's every 6 years that these terms are?
Yes.
So a big wave, it would take wave after wave after wave, or a long-term trend really to make a substantial impact on the way that the bench is made up. So Alicia Bannon, is that kind of the trend across the nation? Are we seeing this? It'll take a long time to see this rectified, at least at the electoral, at the ballot.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, given the way that terms are structured and that judges tend to sit for long terms, I think it's a problem that's slow to address. One other thing that we found in our report was that in many states, including Texas, states have actually moved backwards, so they are become less diverse over time, at least on some measures. So, you know, I think that that there's a lot of attention that needs to go towards, you know, really building a diverse bench, building pipelines to the bench, and, you know, other policy reforms to make it easier for women and people of color to compete in elections and ultimately get seats on these courts.
And also covering these elections, making sure that they find space in the media to be talked about so that the voters know that these people are running and what they're running for and why it matters to them. I want to thank all of our guests. Alicia Bannon, Managing Director of the Democracy Program at the Brenham Center for Justice and the co-author of the report State Supreme Court Diversity. Emma Platoff covers the law and its intersection with politics for the Texas Tribune. And Sharon Novato, she is a professor at the Department of Political Science and Geography at the University of Texas at San Antonio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Ken Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Ross Piedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.